Yes, now the next speaker, I'm being a little bit militant, I apologize. You have to wait till I say your name complete. What the next speaker we have here is Dr. Cassandra Arroyo. She's coming in from, she gave me a bit of background on how to pronounce this, and I apologize if I don't pronounce it correctly. Xiaoping Shu College of Public Health in Georgia and Southern University. Her topic is Somos Diferentes. We're all different, breaking down the Hispanic paradox using the National Health Interview Survey between 1997 and 2003.
So I'm a bit of control freak, so I'm going to move this up here just so I can click through. So as she said, as you can see, really the point of my presentation today is to kind of give you a little bit of a taste of some of the things that people have already talked about. Some of them have already mentioned that there's considerable heterogeneity in the Hispanic population in the United States. And a lot of this has come from just some exploratory analysis, and so I'm hoping that what you see today is going to be very interesting to you, and that you have some feedback for me because I'm in the process of writing this up. All right. I have no relationships to disclose. We all have relationships, but I have none that I need to disclose here. All right. So just to give you a little bit of background, as we all know, the Hispanic population represents the largest and most rapidly growing minority group in the United States. And the census projections indicate that a 200% increase in the U.S. Hispanic population should happen by the year 2050. There are various socio-demographic attributes that have been demonstrated to have a significant inverse relationship on risk factor prevalence and adverse outcomes for U.S. Hispanics, including race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, language barriers, and such as primary language spoken. Okay, so just to give you an idea of what the Hispanic population looks like on some of these socio-demographic characteristics, you know, I have here some information from the Census Bureau, and what you see here is the percent living below the poverty level as defined by the census, not by what you're talking about, because there's plenty of places in the United States where this is not a real measure of poverty. But just to give you an idea, you can see here compared to non-Hispanic whites, Hispanics are living at greater rates in the at percent below the poverty level. And this is by age, so you can see by age, and mostly that there's more children living under the poverty level, which has great implications for chronic disease prevention. Okay, and then also by education, you can see that when I was updating this slide, there's been some slight improvements in reducing the disparity in education, but it hasn't been great. So as you can see, there are still great disparities between Hispanics and non-Hispanic whites and how much education they actually have. Okay, so the idea that has been proposed in general, you know, by the literature, many of you who look at socioeconomic status, you look at, you know, these types of risk factors, you know that disadvantaged socioeconomic status is supposed to lead to less favorable health outcomes, okay? But for Hispanics, the Hispanic paradox says that this does not happen, okay? So what is the Hispanic paradox? Many of you who are familiar with this topic may know that it is the definition says that health outcomes are unexpectedly equal or better than non-Hispanic whites in the United States, in spite of the Hispanics' less favorable socioeconomic status, okay? And again, I point out that I'm saying Hispanics having unexpectedly equal or better health, as if it's a problem that they're having better health. Okay? So we have the related outcomes that this arises from are the chronic diseases such as cardiovascular disease and diabetes, adult mortality, birth weight, infant mortality, mainly neonatal mortality. And some of the potential explanations that have been offered are things like effects of social networks, as you, as the previous presenter has already talked about. There's the idea of the healthy migrant hypothesis that, you know, in order to get to the United States, you might have to be a little bit healthy to make it here, okay? And in particular for some populations versus others. There are also differences in diet, okay? And then there are also differences in occupation. Now, my question was, as I was starting to look at the literature and I was starting to read things, and I, you know, as a curious graduate student and that sort of thing, and in my postdoc, you know, I started to wonder, is this a real paradox? Okay, because as a Puerto Rican female, you know, and knowing my family history, you know, cardiovascular disease is not non-existent in my family, you know, and it's not related to not to diabetes in my family. You know, there are plenty of people in my family who have diabetes, who have their own issues, but then, you know, people like my father and my uncle, they have issues with hypertension, they have issues with high cholesterol, and they're not, they don't have diabetes. And so a lot of times that people use the connection that you know, hypertension and cardiovascular disease are high in Latinos because it's related to diabetes. And I know that in some people it's not. So my question was, is this Hispanic paradox real? So I started looking in the literature, and what I started thinking about was the fact that Hispanics, and I keep saying quotes, Hispanics is a loaded term, okay? It represents a very diverse population. It represents, like I said already, the explanations about the different diets. There are different immigration patterns related to the different ethnic backgrounds. There are different social and political climates in the country of origin that impact health. And then there are also different acculturation and assimilation effects of these particular populations. And so as I was reading the literature, I found maybe a handful of things that were slowly mounting the evidence against the Hispanic paradox. And I wanted to be a part of that, that mounting evidence. So I originally started looking at, because I was trying to get a feel for what data was out there, and as many of you may know, there's not a whole lot. So I started with the NHANES, okay? And I was excited because, oh, there was a Hispanic HANES, because as we all know, NHANES is a very rich data set. It has very objective measures of certain health outcomes, and it's used a lot in the literature. However, the last time they did a Hispanic HANES was 1982 to 1984. Okay, it's been a long time since they've looked at anybody besides Mexican Americans. Okay, and I understand, we all know that they are the majority population as far as they make up the majority of the Latinos in the United States. However, what you do when you do that kind of thing is you miss out on those people that may have potential to have an impact on their interventions. So my preliminary research was to look at NHANES and HANES across the years. And what you see is you see this very low prevalence of obesity back in 1982-84, okay, you know, maybe we were doing more activity, I don't know, right? As you get to 1999 to 2000, you know, you see it's almost doubled, but again, they're not comparable, okay? Well, they're not comparable because that's Mexican Americans, this is a more diverse population. And the same thing with diabetes and hypertension, okay? So then I started looking for more reasons as to do this. So one of the things that hit me was the reason why this is important is mostly because, and you've already heard me say, is that the risk factors for diabetes and other chronic conditions are disproportionately higher among U.S. Hispanics. And there's little public health information that is known about national diabetes risk factors trends among U.S. Hispanics. And so the exploration of the heterogeneity of risk factor prevalence across Hispanic subgroups is sparse or outdated. So the findings that I have can hopefully be used to help develop tailored, culturally relevant risk reduction efforts for Hispanics in the United States. So the primary objective for my particular research project was to characterize the trends in the distribution of diabetes and major established modifiable risk factors for diabetes in the United States Hispanics by Hispanic subgroup from 1997 to 2003. So I used the National Health Interview Survey. I got really excited because they actually had the Hispanic subgroup information. And it's conducted on annual face-to-face interviews. It's a nationally representative sample of households. Each week, a probability sample of civilian non-institutionalized U.S. population is interviewed. And then the information obtained on health and other characteristics is for each member of the household. So it also gives us an opportunity to be able to potentially look at family effects, which I have not done here, but I will. So the data that they have available is for Puerto Ricans, Mexican Americans, Cuban Americans, and other Hispanics, okay? So the inclusion criteria that we used was that we were looking solely at adults, so adults over the age of 18, Puerto Rican, Mexican, and Cuban American respondents. We excluded pregnant women because sometimes they have gestational diabetes. Their weight doesn't matter, you know, you get pregnant, you gotta wait. So then the aggregate data at the end was from 5,576 respondents. So then what we did was we did age standardized prevalence based on Census 2000 population distribution. Our primary outcomes were diabetes, and these are all self-report. Has a doctor ever told you you've had diabetes? What is your height and weight? And then BMI is calculated based on self-reported height and weight. It's classified for here as 30 kilograms per meter squared is obesity. Hypertension, yes or no, your doctor told you you had high blood pressure. Physical activity is less physical, it has to do with the number of times per week. I'm not a big fan of this physical activity measure, so I'm not really going to report that stuff. Graphical displays were then made of the outcomes by gender, level of education, race, ethnicity, and then by Hispanic subgroup. Okay, so just to give you a picture of the overall rates, you can see from 1997, obesity rate was about at 19%. and it only increased to about 23.1. This is far below the NHANES rate, okay? And as we know, the NHANES rate is not self-reported, okay? So that's one reason. So as you can see, the rate of hypertension has pretty much stayed the same for overall Hispanics. Diabetes has gone up slightly, and then vigorous physical activity, you know, has supposedly gone up. Okay, so just to give you an idea, looking at the first graph here, I have on this graph compared to non-Hispanic whites and non-Hispanic blacks as a point of reference, okay? So what we have here are the age-standardized prevalence of diabetes by race ethnicity, and as you can see, the picture of health for Hispanics and non-Hispanic whites look about equal, right? So this is what they talk about when they say the Hispanic paradox. You know, they have lower SES, they have lower education, all those sorts of things, but yet they have the similar health profile. When you separate it out by the Hispanic subgroups, the picture is very different, okay? This is non-Hispanic whites, okay? This brown line here is non-Hispanic blacks. You have Puerto Ricans and Mexican Americans are almost consistently higher than non-Hispanic blacks. I was watching a presentation earlier today, and they were reporting rates of diabetes, and they reported it for Latinos as a whole, and it was showing that Latinos had lower rates of diabetes than African Americans. So this is what I'm talking about, okay? All right, moving on. Age standardized prevalence of obesity by race ethnicity. We have non-Hispanic blacks, again, high. This is what we know from the literature. Same picture, okay? Separated out. We have non-Hispanic blacks. Yes, they're still higher, but the Puerto Ricans and Mexican Americans are kind of competing, all right? But they're still higher than the non-Hispanic whites, okay? This is a picture that we miss when we lump us all together. Non-Hispanic whites, this is hypertension. Non-Hispanic whites and Hispanics yet again, same. Pull them out. You've got Hispanic, you got Puerto Ricans and Mexican Americans are above the non-Hispanic whites. Well, you see what I'm saying here. So hypertension, not that big of a deal, but the other two, pretty big deal. So overall, the other results that I want to just sort of briefly talk about are this, that obesity increased from 4% from 1997 to 2003. Hispanics reported an increase in moderate and vigorous physical activity from 1997 to 2003. Cuban and Cuban Americans in the study reported less moderate physical activity, and the other Hispanics reported more moderate and vigorous physical activity. Hypertension and diabetes rates were stable overall, and Hispanics with more than a high school education and less obesity and had less obesity, hypertension, diabetes, and they had more moderate and vigorous physical activity. Okay, so what are the limitations? Well, we did not examine nativity, despite the fact that recent studies have suggested its importance. We want to know whether or not they're first generation, second generation, how long they've been in the United States. Self-reported physical activity. As somebody who did her dissertation on physical activity measurements objectively, this is hard for me. This is why I really was not presenting those results, because I really do not like the questions that they ask. body mass index was calculated, again, like I said, from self-reported height and weight. We all know that women tend to underreport their weight, men tend to overreport their height. Cross-sectional estimates at each time point, so we can't necessarily look at, you know, these risk factors leading to diabetes or anything. And we also have the inability to construct a comprehensive measure of SES. I don't believe in just using education as a measure of SES, although that's what I used as an SES measure. We all know that SES is a very comprehensive structure that has to do with income, occupation, education, where you live, all those sorts of things, and we don't have the ability to do that completely with the National Health Interview Survey. And then we have the strengths we had here were just the ability to qualitatively describe the trends by important sociocultural factors. So this was important for me, because a lot of times I feel like pictures have a whole lot more to say than words, okay? So that's why I decided to just do graphical displays of the rates so that you can see what I'm talking about. We had large samples that were available at each time point, and there was a consistent sampling scheme over time, which can allow us to, in the future, do time trend analysis. That was one of the drawbacks of using NHANES. They kept changing the sampling structure, so you can't really do time comparisons. And then we also had the subgroup data available on the national level, which is very rare. So just in conclusion, some of the results reveal obviously considerable heterogeneity regarding variation in the prevalence of increasing risk factor trends among U.S. Hispanics. We all know that more comprehensive databases are necessary to, one, ascertain ethnic variability within the United States Hispanic population, and also to identify and target specific groups that may be at higher risk. We also know that longitudinal studies are needed to examine trends and incidence of diabetes and cardiovascular disease within the United States Hispanic population. So why is all of this important? I've hinted at it already, but there's great potential for economic burden on the healthcare system if this goes ignored. Okay, missing out on groups at higher risk also puts them at a higher risk of going on to develop these sorts of chronic diseases. We also have the ability, it impedes us from going forward with our ability to develop tailored interventions and prevention strategies. And honestly, nobody likes to be ignored in research. Okay, when you're doing research and you're reading about topics that come out in the research, and you look at this research and you're like, this is not me. This doesn't represent who I am. This has nothing to do with me. So I really believe that as a trained statistician, you'll probably never hear anyone say this, but we need to move away from the traditional approaches to research that we do involving the underserved, because we need to begin developing methods to explore and acknowledge the heterogeneity that is the United States. For one, I'm a big proponent of letting people define who they are and just using it, not lumping each other into groups, because you have the same issue with Asian Americans. You have the same issue with black people in America, because they're also a very heterogeneous group that we'd also tend to lump together. So as a statistician turned epidemiologist, this is sort of where I'm moving forward with my work, is sort of trying to move towards a more comprehensive measure of what race and ethnicity are really getting at in the United States. So I just want to quickly acknowledge some of my collaborators. This work was done while I was a postdoc at Morehouse School of Medicine in their Social Epidemiology Research Center, and also to my graduate assistant at Georgia Southern, who's helping me push it forward. And then also it was funded in part by these particular people. Thank you. Questions?
Any questions?
Yes.
This is, I'm agnostic about it, but did you do age gender adjustment for all the race?
No, this is a very... Yeah, this is a very, very preliminary sort of exploratory analysis. It was really trying to see if we saw anything. I haven't done any statistical tests to see if this is even significant. And that sort of, as we move forward, is getting into the time trends and maybe doing age, gender interactions kind of thing. But we did see that there were, when I was doing the exploratory stuff, when you look at overall rates, the differences between men and women are really big, actually. Women have higher rates of the obesity, but again, you know, we all know that's pretty typical. And so we are going to have to adjust for those kinds of things, but we're not there yet with this particular project.
I think the charts already convincingly show heterogeneity, but if you're going to put time and trend, then there's got to be some sense of the cohort changes,
the
population changes.
Yeah. No, I agree. I definitely agree. Any other questions? Yeah, I think the problem with that is that we don't have that information with the National Health Interview Survey. And moving forward, I'm submitting a grant to actually try to replicate this analysis with NLAS, the National Latino and Asian American Study. So to try to see if we see it when you have more and you have that information. Okay.
Okay, well, thank you very much.